Music and Booze with Mo is co-produced and distributed by Nitty Grits, the media division of the National Food and Beverage Foundation, changing the world one taste at a time. Welcome to Music and Booze with Mo. I'm Mo Herms, and I've worked in the music industry most of my life, so have met some pretty amazing musicians over the years. I also love a good cocktail, and I've encountered some really interesting bartenders as well. It seems that there's a lot of crossover, so when I can, I like to talk to musicians and bartenders about music and booze. Join us at the bar, won't you? For the next few episodes, we'll be doing something a little special here on Music and Booze with Mo. It is my tropical summer of cocktails. I've never made a secret of my love for tropical and tiki. I love wearing flowers in my hair. I always have. I grew up by the beach. Surfing was a big part of my life. Tiki naturally fell in line with all of that. And tiki is going through quite a resurgence, revival. There are many, many things going on in the tiki world and the tropical world, so I took it upon myself to talk to various friends and colleagues and new friends about their lives in the tiki world, and it's been tons of fun talking to these folks about their tropical creations and such. So join us for the summer as we have Mo's Tropical Summer on Music and Booze with Mo. Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you in part by Barkeeper, a head shop for cocktail lovers located in the Sunset Junction area of Silver Lake. Stop by for barware, vintage glassware, a carefully curated selection of spirits, and one of the most impressive collections of bitters anywhere. That's Barkeeper in Los Angeles. Check them out online at barkeepersilverlake.com, or better yet, just head on down to the store.
Shake, Sinora, shake your body line. Shake, 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 Sinora, shake it all the time. Work, 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 Sinora, work your body line. Work, 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 Sinora, work it all the time.
This episode has me sitting on a bench in a park in Brooklyn chatting with Captain Brian Miller. Brian Miller is very well known on the East Coast, and shall I say, he's quite well known throughout the international tiki scene as well. He has been a pioneer in New York, keeping the tiki alive out there. Tiki has had a difficult time finding a permanent foothold in the Big Apple, but he is certainly doing his best to make that the case. Recently, May of 2018, he was part of the major food group opening the Polynesian, which is a tiki lounge on 42nd Street at the Pod Hotel, which I highly recommend you check out. It is a beautiful, beautiful space. He comes from the storied Pegu Club and Death & Co. and more. We'll talk about all of that here on the interview, but I also wanted to throw out there that if you haven't had his cocktail, the Winchester, try to find someone who knows what they're doing to make it for you, unless you're in New York, in which case you can get it from him, probably himself, at the Polynesian. It is a gin-based take on the zombie, and Martin Kate of Smuggler's Cove calls it a real good drink, and then one of our heroes, Jeff Beachman Berry, has called it the first and best 21st century cocktail to push the boundaries of classic tiki. So we did start off our interview talking about Beach Bum Berry. So why don't we get into it? This is me and Brian Miller of New York. A lovely afternoon, and here we are gossiping. We're actually just singing the praises of Beach Bum Berry.
Let's see what happens. But yeah, I mean, it's fun. I like talking with Jeff about it because he's just such a scholar. He's like such a nerd. He's like that about everything. You know, he was like that about film. He's like that about music. He's like that about everything. He sees something and he wants to know more and he researches it and he learns about it. And I totally respect that. So he's an authority.
He is the Indiana Jones of tiki.
Right?
Like, he discovers all of it. Like, none of it. I mean, he changed my life. Like,
Jeff.
If I could say that there was a person that actually changed my life outside of my folks, it's him. His books changed my life.
Yeah.
Like, I would not be doing what I'm doing now if it wasn't for him.
If it wasn't for Jeff Berry.
Because it was just like, his books were, like, when you look, you know, we took ourselves so fucking seriously with our cocktails and our mustache wax and the fucking arm garters and all that shit. And we tried to turn a bar into a classroom, which is just like the biggest fucking mistake you could possibly make. And reading his stuff was like, I was like, oh my God, these drinks are so complex. And it's like, and it's just, it's juices and syrups. It's not using crazy booze or anything like that. It's like, cool, you got to blend the rums, you know, to try to come up with something, and everybody adds their 2 cents worth on how to blend rums and whatnot. But like, his stuff was so fucking revolutionary. I was like, oh my God, these tiki cocktails are super complex. And people, you know, after a while were like, Jesus Christ, Miller, you know, was this another 12 ingredient fucking cocktail? You know, like Mickey.
Girl,
and
they
Mickey,
were doing this in the 40s. You can do it.
Yeah, it was like Mickey and Sammy with Attaboy now, you know, and they were Milk and Honey, and they were just like, oh, Jesus Christ, Miller, you and your fucking cocktails. And I was like, yeah, guys, I think it's really cute the way you can balance 3. Let me know when you can balance 8 to 12. It was like, just, you know, let me know when you want to take the training wheels off your bartender's kit and, like, join the big boys. Because I was like, because tiki is not a joke. It's, you know, and it's not a trend. It's not something that's dying. It's not something that's going away.
No, it's absolutely like, not a trend.
People are just, whoa, that was fucking crazy.
What happened just now?
The branch just fell down.
This is what we get for being in a park. What happens when you go outside?
Nature.
well, how about you introduce yourself?
So I am, as they say, Captain Brian Miller.
It is Captain.
Now that I finally have my own ship, yes, now I can officially have this title.
You're legit captain.
Brian Miller, I am a partner and beverage director behind the Polynesian.
The Polynesian. And you've been doing this thing. How long have you been serving drinks?
I've been serving drinks. I mean, cocktails, like, over 20 years.
I was going to say, like,
23,
like, 20. Almost your whole life. Was it, like, a calling to you to make cocktails? Because I have met some people where it is.
No, I'm not that special. I wasn't a chosen one. Honestly, it was more when I moved to the city, it was like I needed a job.
You know?
And I started off as a food runner at a place called Grove. And then I worked my way up to a busboy and then a waiter and... then I was a bartender and they were only serving wine and beer. And I remember trying to like learn how to be a bartender. Like, what recipes do I need to know? And I had, a friend of mine, Pat, who I went to college with back in Seattle at Washington State, and he was living in Seattle and he was a bartender. And I was like, hey man, I was like, can you send me some recipes so I can learn about cocktails? And he sends me like 30 pages of cocktails. And as I'm looking through these, I'm not kidding, at least 20 of them had 2 scoops of ice cream in them. And I was like, are you a bartender or a fucking soda jerk?
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand what this is. I was like, we don't have liquid ice cream. And my brother, Danny, would take me out to bars and we'd sit and we'd order drinks and he would show me. He'd be like, okay, well, first of all, like, look behind the bar and you'll see everything will be in pairs or will be packed together. All the gins will be here, all the tequilas will be here, and bourbons and rums. And so I was able to get familiar with names by looking at the back bar. And then he was like, this is New York City. He's like, they fucking tell you exactly what they want. They don't order a Cuba Libra, they say a rum and coke. And yes, I know they're two totally different things now, but like back in the day, a Cuba Libre was a rum and coke.
Yeah.
They'll call it a Cape Cod out west, but it's fucking vodka cranberry here. Mm-hmm. And so I just started to learn, and like I had, yeah, it was like I was a drinker when I was in college. So like a friend of mine, Linda, she gave me a Mr. Boston's guide. So I had one of those.
Oh, cool.
And, you know, then I started, you know, I was just kind of doing a Mr. Boston's guide thing of like making drinks, and, you know, it wasn't really the internet serving for drinks. You were just buying books. Mm-hmm. And, I got a job several years later, working for Jerry Banks, who was like a disciple of Audrey Saunders. But Jerry was doing the type of cocktails that you see now. She was doing this back in the 90s, you know, late 90s, early 2000s. And Jerry was like very strict about drinks. Like, I worked at a place called Lemu with her that was this short-lived place next to, on 19th Street. What is it, Kraft? Or whatever the restaurant that's there. It's like this big high-end restaurant. I can't remember what the name of it was. But yeah, I'm not a foodie, so don't pay attention
to that.
Just
a drinky.
But we were making these great drinks with like fresh fruit and vermouths and like measuring things. And she was the type of woman who could like, she would walk by me and go, "You're pouring too much." Like while I'm jiggering, she'd be like, "Brian, it's a quarter of an ounce, not a half an ounce." And I was like, she could look at me and know that I was doing the wrong thing. But she was such an, like, I loved her cocktails. I loved what she was doing. And I was like, "Hey, what should I be reading? Like, what books are good for me?" And she said, Dale DeGroff's Craft of the Cocktail and Charles Schumann, The Art of the Bar. So I bought those books and started reading, and, you know, Dale's book, I still have my first copy. It's like all dog-eared and like ripped apart, and it's not even in the binding anymore. I had it rebound at Kinko's just so I could keep flipping through it, because I just like lived and died by that book. And, you know, people were just like, "Who the fuck are you?" I was like, I'm studying somebody else. Like, this is not me. I'm just following the rules. And I got... Lemu was a nightmare. I ended up getting out of there, and then I went to a friend of mine that I worked with at Lemu got me a job at Boulet. Not really a great place for cocktails, but like tons of wine, and like I was slow. I spent a lot of time like making Dale's drinks. So it was like, cool, here's an apple martini. Here's like a, you know, here's an espresso martini. You know, people just like going crazy over these little things. And then George W. Bush got elected president. And I was like, part of the inspiration was, have you ever seen, I think it's like Blue in the Face, the Harvey Keitel movie where like...
I've never seen it, but I know what you're talking about.
He owns the bodega, I think, out in Queens. Yeah. And it's like, it's Jim Jarmusch, and it's got like all these guys interviewing. And there's a scene with Lou Reed as Lou Reed. And he's like, "I've been living in New York for like 35 years. I'm thinking about moving. I'm almost ready." And I was like, I don't want to be that guy. I was like, if I can get out of the city, I'm going to get out of the city. And so, you know, George W. Bush gets elected. I was like, I'm going to move as far away from the United States as I can without actually leaving the United States.
Sugar Plum Fairy came and hit the streets, looking for soul food and a place to eat. Went to the Apollo, you should have seen him go, go, go. They said, "Hey, sugar, take a walk on the wild side." I said, "Hey, babe, take a walk on the wild side." All right. Ha.
So I moved to Hawaii, and I get there, and it was really hard to try to find a job because they just want locals there, you know, because when tourists come in, they want them to see the local faces. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't want a howley behind the bar. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but the problem with that is most of the locals are either out surfing or they can't pass the drug test, you know. And I was like, well, shit, I'm new. I don't have any drug connections, and I can't surf to save my life. So, but I could never get a job there, and I ended up working at an Italian restaurant. Met this guy Marco, that was the name of his restaurant. It was in Kihei. It was Marco's Italian Steakhouse or something like that. And you know, we bonded because it was like, oh, you're from Philadelphia, I'm from New York. We're supposed to hate each other, but now we're in Hawaii, and it's like, yeah, we're East Coast people. And he was a really nice guy. But it was like, I went in, I remember going into that bar and seeing the bottle of Campari that was like tucked way in an Italian restaurant, tucked way in the back.
All,
and it was
dusty,
like,
and
I pulled it, I was like,
yeah.
And it was like dandelion spores of dust that just like blew up all over the place. I was like, Negronis, you guys don't make these here? Like, I guess not. And, you know, I was, the first time I made a Mai Tai there, I like made like a Trader Vic Mai Tai, and I, yeah, put, I was like, where's the fresh mint? And they're like, what? And I was like, fresh mint.
They're all supposed to be pineapple in this.
And they were like, who the fuck do you think you are, Trader Vic? And I was like, he did create the drink. I'm like just trying to copy it, because the Mai Tai there was like,
it was
Myers and 151 and orange juice, mm-hmm, and grenadine, mm-hmm, and they were looking at mine, which you could almost look through, mm-hmm, and they were like, what the fuck is this? It was like, it's basically a daiquiri on steroids, basically what this is. I had no idea. We were serving pina coladas that were made with liquid ice cream that came,
oh,
out of one,
God,
of those like Parmesan, yep, wine box tap things. It was, it was, you know, and it's like, I'm serving large bowls of pasta carbonara with a pina colada. I'm like, this is going to kill somebody. Like, you know, we need to leave some room for the blood clot to go swiftly to their brains, you know. And the cream and pasta. It was insane, no, you know, dealing with people there who would, like, white people who were, like, super dark, leathery tan and be like, I'm Kama'aina. And I was like, no, you're not. You're not family. I was like, that's not, no. I was like, we're the intruders. I totally get it, you know. But it's like, yes, I have to give you a discount because you have a local ID. But it was just, you know,
wow,
that's a rambling version of how I got started.
Well, you made it back to New York.
Yeah, so
after that,
my...
Was it when George W. was gone? Did you,
no,
live in Hawaii for 8 years?
I got out just after, like, 3 years after he'd been in office. I finally left, and I spent, like, 6 months in Hawaii because it was, like, it's all I could take.
Yeah.
And at the time, my grandmother was dying, and she was in Seattle. So back
reason to go home.
So I was like, cool, I'm going to go home for like 6 months. I was like, it can't be any worse in Seattle than it is here. I was like, so I should be able to find a decent bar out there. And so I got to see my grandmother. I was fortunate enough to be with her, mm-hmm, before she passed away. And applying for jobs out there, and it was like, it was really hard.
This is in the 2000s?
This was like, yeah, 2004.
Yeah.
So I had moved back just in time for George Bush to get elected again. So I left when he got elected the first time. I came back when he was...
Got elected the second time.
Yeah, the second time. I was like, great, here we go again. And like, the nice thing was, I have a dear friend of mine, Gretchen Kenny. She's like the queen of the restaurant industry in Seattle. Mm-hmm. She's been taking care of me since I could drink. holding my head up, you know, making sure I ate food, and she's been a mother figure and just an awesome friend of mine. But she works with Tom Douglas, who's like the big chef out there.
Okay.
She works at all his restaurants. She's worked at all his restaurants, and she took me to Zigzag. That was like the first thing she did. And I had seen it.
And was Zigzag then the Zigzag we know now?
It was. Yeah, I mean, it
just a beautiful place to get amazing cocktails.
Yeah, it wasn't a place like I discovered it. Like,
yeah,
it was a legendary thing.
Place.
Like, there was another thing, like, before Yelp, it was like City Search or something like,
yeah,
that. And I had found Zigzag on there, and I was like, oh, this place looks really, because I was researching bars, and I was like, oh, this place Zigzag looks really cool. And then Gretchen's like, I know Ben, you should come. And I was like, oh, great. And I show up at that bar, and I meet Ben Doherty, who's one of the owners. And Ben was just like, what do you like to drink? And I was like, I like bourbon. And he's like, great, done. Made me a Frisco. And it was fucking delicious. And they did it without jiggers. Like, they were magicians there. And I watched Murray, and I just, like, fell in love with this place. I still think it is my Disneyland. It's the happiest place on earth for me. Like, when I go there, yeah, I get treated incredibly well. I've gone there before where it's like there'd be a name plaque there that says reserved for Brian Miller, and
aww,
I'll come in, and they, but like, it's when I met Murray, and Murray is just like, Murray is he's Don the Beach. To me, he's Don the Beachcomber and Jerry Thomas, like, wrapped into one. He's like the professional who's just awesome at everything, and he's just a sweet older gentleman who's not a snob. He doesn't like make fun of you for your drinks. Mm-hmm. He just makes whatever you order, he makes the best. It's the best of whatever you're going to get. And I was so, the only Tales of the Cocktail Award I've ever given two shits about was seeing him win Bartender of the Year.
Oh.
Him and Bum winning for Pirate Potions of the Caribbean were the only two awards I've ever cared about. And although I really wanted Bum to win for Sip and Safari, but he's got the 10-year edition. Maybe he'll get
yeah,
it.
Yeah, he's up for
around.
The 10-year.
Yeah.
So we'll, I know
he better,
it's in the
he better
final.
Win it, or I'll take a torch to that town. You know,
so that inspired you, I'm guessing, a lot, or just seeing that.
To see that was really cool, and I wanted to work there, and of course, it was really hard for me. Like, I couldn't get a job. They had just hired somebody there. I really struggled for, like, the 6 months that I lived there. I was probably unemployed for three.
Oh, God.
Went through some really crazy interviews where people just, like, there was a guy that interviewed me for 3 hours and grilled me on it, like, what is gin? Yeah, didn't give me a job, and then at the end of the interview, he was like, do you want something to drink? And I was like, yeah, I'd love a drink. I was like, can I have a sidecar? And he's like, let me make you my 5-star sidecar. He made it with fucking Metaxa, the fucking Spanish brandy.
Mm-hmm.
And then this was the first time I witnessed the Seattle Muddle. Which is a fucking hate crime. They should take that town's name off of it because it's a detriment to Seattle. But it was like they would take wedges, whatever, it was lime or lemon,
uh-huh.
and then they put ice, and then they muddle on top of it,
on top
and that's
of the
how
ice?
They get the juice.
Okay.
You know, and I was like, you guys know about the acid from the rind, right? Like that.
Like we were talking about
yeah,
this earlier.
Like, yeah, I was like, that'll change the taste of the cocktail.
The whole thing. Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, no, they just muddled the shit out of it. Then the guy shook it. There was literally an ocean of ice chips on top of it.
Oh.
And then he charged me. He was like, don't worry, I'll charge you happy hour prices. I was like, you just waterboarded me with this cocktail, and now I'm going to be charged for it? I was like, thanks, but no thanks. I paid for that, you know. And Seattle has grown by leaps and bounds.
Yes, for sure.
Like, Seattle is a great, great cocktail scene. Rumba is definitely, I wish
a
that
wonderful
would,
spot.
I wish that bar was there when I lived there. I would have probably been the Norm Peterson of that bar.
But you're back here, and so you got back into cocktailing out here. And did when you came back, is that when you hit Pegu Club?
I got back, I started at Jerry. I had reached out to Jerry from my time at Lemieux, and I was like, hey, I'm coming back to New York. I've been away for a year.
Yeah.
I was like, New York cocktail scene is like computers. It's like what's in today is out tomorrow.
Yeah,
so I
yeah.
felt like this town was completely new to me. I didn't know where to go. And I met up with Jerry, and she was getting her own place, a place called Juniper Suite. And that was a nightmare as well. Long story short, Jerry was, as a consultant, she was let go the day the bar opened.
Oh, no.
We went through like 32 different menu changes as far as food. Like,
oh my God.
We had 32 owners, 32 investors, which basically means there's too many chefs in the kitchen.
Yeah.
We didn't know what we were doing there. But that was the place where it was like, that was the first time I served Dale DeGroff. He was my very first customer there. I served him our twist on a whiskey. You know, yeah, Dale DeGroff shows up. I really don't even know the recipes. He orders a cocktail. I'm like looking at the menu trying to like figure out how to make it. I'm like, it's fucking Dale DeGroff.
You're like, I've been making these drinks for years.
You know, Audrey was there like... And I knew of them just from reading about them, but I never was introduced. I didn't really know any of them. And then that closed. I was devastated when Jerry was let go, and so I ended up quitting. It's actually where I met Jason Cott, mm-hmm. who owns Pouring Ribbons. We met there for the first time. Jason was a bartender then. That was the first time I met Jason and the last time Jason was ever a bartender. But I will say he made me probably the best Manhattan I've ever had in my life with Blanton's. And he's like... It's bourbon for most bitters, Brian. There's nothing special I can do about it. I was like, I know you're not known for love, Jason, but you must have put a lot of love in that drink.
Yeah, right?
It was absolutely delicious. I definitely remember it. You know, but he's like me. He was like, I didn't do anything special. But so after Jerry left, I was like, I gotta fucking find a place. Like, where am I gonna go? And so I was looking online, and I went to kingcocktail.com. And to my fucking surprise, Dale's email was on the fucking website. I was like, what? I can actually reach out to this guy? And I had talked to Jerry, and I was like, hey, I love what you do. I was like, I want to, can you recommend where I should go now? Like, who should I go and see? And she's like, I got this friend, Audrey Saunders. She's opening this place called Pegu Club. You should send a resume. So on the same day, I sent my resume to Dale, and I was like, hey, I love what you do. I want to make drinks the way that you make them in Craft of the Cocktail. I was like, can you recommend some bars for me to go and apply to? And I wrote Audrey, and I was like, hey, I'm a friend of Jerry Banks. I was like, she tells me you're opening a bar. I was like, can I send you my resume? Here's my resume. Like, let me know what you think. On that same day, Audrey sent my email to Dale, and Dale sent my email to Audrey. And later that day, Jill DeGroff calls me up. She's like, hi, it's Jill DeGroff. And I was like, I nearly dropped the phone. Because at this point, we actually had phones, not cell phones. And I was like, hi. And she's like, how would you like to work with Dale DeGroff? And I was like, very much so.
Yeah.
And he was doing an event at the space underneath the 59th Street Bridge. And she's like, okay, be here at this time. It's this event. I was like, great. Audrey, like, emails me, and she's like, I'd love to talk to you. And I was like, cool. Like, we set up an interview. And so I go and I do the event with Dale. And it was the first time I'd seen a bartender given respect. Hmm. Like, for all the years I'd been a bartender before, it was like, so what else do you do? Are you model? Are you a musician? Right. Are you an actor or whatever? Of course, I was like, I couldn't act my way out of a paper bag. I was looked at bartending and was like, people were like, how'd you get into bartending? I was like, it's like Rocky. I was like, I can't sing or dance, therefore I became a bartender. He couldn't sing or dance, so he became a boxer. And so I remember vividly, like, the first thing, walking into that event space, and there's Dale DeGroff, and there's a woman in, like, a giant white mink coat, silver hair, just like, Mama Warbucks, man. She just looked fucking loaded. And she is kissing his ass.
Oh,
like,
wow.
Holding his hand, kissing his ring, like, just treating. I was like, who the fuck is that guy? Like, I didn't want to be him. I was just like, oh my God, that's fucking Dale. And they're not treating him like he's the fucking help. They're treating him like he's a beautiful human being, you know, of which he is. And then it was like I met Julie Reiner there, and I met Leo, his son, for the first time, and we were, and Dale was repping Grand Centenario, the Cuervo offshoot or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I remember, like, slaving away in there and having a really good time. And then Dale DeGroff comes up and puts 3-shot glasses down and pours a shot for me, Leo, and himself. And we do the shot together, and I was like, yeah, I could get used to this.
Because, you know, I'd been hanging around Tiki World and everything, and I knew that if you were East Coast, there was this guy. It's like this pirate guy, you know, Captain Brian Miller, and he was the one who was keeping the Tiki flag flying in New York. That was the impression that I had, anyway, being on the West Coast, you were.
That's what they say.
Well, you were at Pegu. Did you work at PKNY as well? No.
No. No, I went from Pegu, then I went to Death & Company, and then I left Death & Company, and then I started Tiki Mondays.
Yeah, and then you started doing a Tiki, and that was pretty much at that time, really wasn't that kind of the only Tiki outlet, cocktail-wise,
there,
here?
I mean, there was, Painkiller was around, and where I started was at Julie Reiner's bar, the Lonnie Kai, which was not necessarily a Tiki bar, you know, but it's like when you make tropical drinks, everyone just tries to throw you into a Tiki bar.
Yeah.
But Julie had explained it as
tropical.
This is, that, she explained, at least what I remember is her explaining it to me was, imagine going to someone's home in Hawaii and having drinks at their house. Mm. that's exactly, having lived in Hawaii and experienced that, that's exactly what it was. It wasn't a tiki bar. Mm-hmm. It was someone's home in Hawaii. Like, that was the vibe I got from it, and she nailed it. You know, then it was like I had left Death & Company, and I was really depressed, and I didn't know what to do, and Julie just, I was sitting there having a Mai Tai at Lani Kai. She was like, Brian, why don't you do what everybody's waiting for you to do? She's like, why don't you make tiki drinks? Mm-hmm. You know, like, come here, you can take the downstairs, you know, and we'll call it Mondays with Miller. And I was like, okay, but I got three rules. I was like, I get to make whatever I want to make. Mm-hmm. I get to wear whatever I want to wear. And I get to listen to whatever music I want to listen to. Because having been at Death & Company and Pegu Club and, like, being a prisoner of someone's outdated playlist, or, like, a prisoner of arm garters and vests and rules about how I'm supposed to look, you know, and making everyone else's drinks, I was like, I'm fucking done with this. I was like, I want to start having fun and just... I want to at least see if what I do is something that would resonate with people. Mm-hmm. You know, and so, like, the first Tiki Mondays was me and Julie, and basically I think 11 people. Mm-hmm. Dave Kaplan and Alex Day came and showed their support. Julie at one point just went on the other side of the bar, and I made her drinks because there was nobody there.
There was nobody there, yeah.
But the funny thing is there were two people that came there, Doug and Crystal. They have been regulars of mine from Tiki Monday and now come to the Polynesian. They've been there since day fucking one.
Wow, that's, like, amazing.
Like, they've been to every place I've ever been to do Tiki Mondays except for the stuff I did outside New York. Mm-hmm. They've been to the Polynesian. They're like, I couldn't, you know, and Ryan Laloya was my corporal captain at the time. He was good friends with them. He was bartending, and he was like, yeah, man, we're doing this Tiki thing. Like, Ryan wasn't there from the beginning. He missed one. Because we didn't need a bar back day one, but
yeah.
He came. Julie was like, I got this guy, I think he's going to be perfect for you, and, like, Ryan and I just became buddies. Like, we just synced up immediately, you know, and he was my confidant, he was my friend, he was somebody that I could just depend on, you know?
So once you started making the tiki drinks, did you feel like, okay, now it's happening? Kind of, sort of,
like,
you created
I'm
this
one
world.
Guy,
I know,
like,
you're one
every
guy,
once but... in a while making drinks. I mean, for Lani Kai, it was like once, it was once, we did for a year and a half, we did a new menu every single day with a different bartender. We create,
oh,
the
my
menu,
God.
We create the menu on Sunday night, and yeah. We executed it on Monday.
Oh my God, that sounds kind of exhausting.
It was insane,
yeah.
But at the time.
Was it insane in that you liked it?
Oh, yeah, it was a labor of love. I mean, now doing something like that compared to what I'm doing at the Polynesian, I was like, pissed off, piece of cake, you know? I mean, without a doubt, the Polynesian is the hardest thing I've ever done.
So the Polynesian opened, I'm not sure, we'll air this
Memorial Day.
Memorial Day of 2018.
Yeah.
And how long were you behind the scenes on this?
I mean,
you've been,
like, how long have I wanted this bar?
Well, I was going to say no, because as someone who's, I'm opening up a bar soon, and it's been something that I've been trying to do for years. So I'm sure you're trying to do it for years, but when did it finally, like, gel? You're like, this is actually happening.
Like, it wasn't until 2015
yeah.
was when, like, I was, my ex-girlfriend and I broke up. She moved to LA. I was here in New York. And I was frantically trying to find a new place to live, find a job. You know, I was rebuilding my life. And so I got a job with Jim Kearns when he opened Happiest Hour and Slowly Surely. And I was like, Jim is always, he's one of my favorite human beings in this industry. He's a fucking warrior. He's part of the reason why he was the inspiration for why I brought guest bartenders to Tiki Mondays, because I wanted to work with him again. Mm-hmm. We worked together at Pegu Club, and Jim's the kind of guy that, like, if you are stuck in a foxhole slinging fucking drinks with bombs going all around you, Jim Kearns is my first choice as somebody I want to be in that foxhole with.
Awesome.
He's such an incredible human being. And just a great friend, and laughs, and we get each other. And so I took the job with Jim, and then, like, 2 weeks later, I get a call from Jeff Selasnik at Major Food Group, and, you know, I had left Slowly Surely, or I had left Happiest Hour, or mm-hmm. I had left ZZ's.
Okay.
I was a ZZ's fan. Sorry, I was a bunch of bars. I had left ZZ's. I was going to move to L.A., and that all blew up in my face. And I came back, and Jeff calls me, and I was like, I'm nervous. Like, he sent me an email. He's like, Brian, I want to talk to you. And I
got, you know,
when Jeff Zelaznik emails you, you're like,
What'd I do?
And
what's
I was like,
happening?
Yeah, I was like freaking out. I was like, wait a minute, I don't work for you. Why the fuck am I nervous? Like, there's no reason for me to be upset about this. And so I meet Jeff, and he was like, I want you to come back and work at ZZ's. And I was like, I can't. I was like, I already got another job. And he's like, okay. He's like, well, this isn't contingent on that. He's like, we have been looking at all these different spaces. Like, they've been approached by a couple of different hotels. Mm-hmm. And they were like, every time we're in these places, all we do is think of you. We're like, this would be the perfect place for Brian. Because back in December of 2014, Jeff asked me to pitch the idea for the bar. Mm-hmm. So Kismet was right there, and my brother was living upstate, and the weekend before the pitch, he found a peacock chair upstate, and he was like, I'm buying this, I'm bringing it down, we're going to use this for the pitch. He'd been putting video together of Tiki Mondays, and so he'd edited it. We'd done an interview with Dale DeGroff, and I put together this, like, insane 12 drink menu, because Jeff was like, why don't you put together, you know, test menu of like 20 to 40 drinks? And I was like, how about 12?
Yeah, right?
I was like, I don't know if I'd actually open with 20 to 40 drinks. And so I put together this menu, and just, you know, in true, like, ZZ's form, like, I made a shark's tooth where the shot of rum was Appleton 21, you know, and just made things over the top and crazy. I invited my friends, the Hula Belly sisters, Ying and her other sisters came in, and I wanted to do the idea that I've always had that we're executing to a certain extent, is I wanted to take the Exotica Bowl, and I wanted to bring that to New York as my homage to the Maikai. I was like, cool. I think that's like one of the coolest presentations ever of a cocktail. And so I created my own version of that, which is nothing like their drink, but I love the presentation of the Hula Girl and the Lay and the Kiss on Both Cheeks. So I had Fresh Lace flown out from Hawaii overnight. Uh-huh. I put those guys in a peacock chair. Like, I balled them out and, like, gave them lace, and the girls came out. I was like, we're going to fucking nail it when these two girls come in and bring a hula, you know, hula dancing and bring a punch bowl to them. And I made the last drink. I'm really nervous, but kind of excited. And I was like, guys, I'm going to step outside for a quick cigarette. You know, I'll let you guys, like, talk. And I go outside, and I'm like, fuck yeah. fucking nailed this. I was like, this was awesome. Like, we, you know, and Ryan and Jelani were with me, and they come out, and they're like, holy shit, man, that was fucking awesome. We nailed it. And then Jeff comes out, you know, and he's like, standing straight up, Stuart walks out, and he's like, it was really good, Brian. And he was like, he goes, that was a 10 out of 10.
Wow.
He goes, we have never been pitched an idea like this before. And I'm thinking, like, you're a major food group. You guys must get pitched ideas all the
time. Well, I'm sure they're pitched ideas all the time, but probably not in such a fun theatrical concept kind of way.
They love it.
That was a whole package. You gave them an experience.
They have been so supportive of me for Tiki. Like, there were, when I came in to ZZ's, I thought that, I was like, here's a 14-seat place. We serve $20 cocktails.
Yeah.
I'm not inviting my friends here. Like, I can't do this. And I figured I could just come and be anonymous. No one would know who I am. No foodie is ever going to know who the fuck I am.
Yeah.
And I could just make drinks. And I get there, and, like, they're like, you're the Tiki guy. And I was like, oh, fuck. I thought I was going to annoy it. So the guys, they at the time, Jeff Rich and Mario were coming in like 2 to 3 times a week.
Yeah.
And I was making them Nui, like Jeff and Rich loved the Nui Nui, and Mario loved his rum old fashions and daiquiris. And I was like, this place is great. Like, they love rum. This is really cool. And they were like super supportive. And Jeff would talk to me and be like, he's like, Brian, how was Tiki Mondays this week? I was like, dude, we did $8,000, you know? And he would like, that's cute. Like, pat me on the head. I was like, really? Fucking Monday night I did $8,000? I was like, damn, I thought that was good. And he just, like, blew it off like it was nothing.
Oh, my God.
And he, but they were just, I had found out years later, Chef Dai Matsuda, who was my, one of my, he is the main consultant chef at the Polynesian, mm-hmm. who is Hawaiian. Got my other chef, Matt Baranski, who's also Hawaiian, his second in command. But Chef Dai was like, he was like, you know they told me to come after you, right? I was like, what? And he's like, Chef Rich came up to me and goes, find out everything you can from this guy about tiki. Like, I want to know what tiki is. Like, they...
Wow.
This may be a rumor. I don't know. Dai's like,
but you'll take
lying
it.
I was like, but that was cool. Like, so Chef Dai was always asking me questions about tiki drinks, and I was making him tiki drinks. And, like, one night he made me, for, he made for staff meal for all of us, Loco Moco. And I was like,
yeah.
Oh, I just fucking, that's when I fell in love with Dai. Because I think the way he runs the kitchen is a little bit, I'm not as good as he is in any stretch of the imagination, but we both have the same personality of like, what the fuck is this? Why aren't you doing this? Like, you know, we can both lose our temper rather quickly. But because we both want to be great.
Yeah. So but, that's why you can work together.
Yeah, yeah, no. Now he's the one who's giving me sage advice on how to be an owner and, like, how to handle things and stuff like that. Like, he's really great. And these guys, they, you know, Jeff was like, we're thinking, you know, when we were talking, he was like, he was thinking about, like, cool, you should do this. And we talked, you know, and he gave me the when he gave me the contract, you know, and it took several months, like much longer than he had originally laid out for
I'm
me
sure.
to finally get the contract. And I remember before, like before he handed me the contract, the day I was giving him whether I was going to do this or not. And we're in Siddell's, and Siddell's isn't open yet. It's just a skeleton of what it is now. And Rich Teresi is there on a bicycle. And as soon as I walk in the door, Rich looks at me. He's like, so are we going to do this, Miller, or what? And I was like, yes, we are. Like, yes, we are. And these guys, like, it's the first time that, you know, I had somebody who, like, believed in me and who was like, I mean, I've had a lot of people. I've been very fortunate.
Yeah,
I've had
yeah.
a lot of people that have believed in me, but not a lot of people with money.
Yeah, you know? Well, this is the first time someone who believed in you was actually handing you the keys
yeah,
to the kingdom.
Yeah, was
in a
like,
way.
Cool, yeah. you can do this because, like, you know, I had Greg Bohm and I had talked about doing a place together like years ago, and then things just kind of fell apart. And, you know, these guys were, when I did the pitch, and this was what everybody was talking about in the New York Times article, was like Rich Teresi looked at me. He's like, Brian, how much time do you plan to spend there? And I was like, I'll spend as much time there as you need me to.
Yeah.
He's like, we see every day. I was like,
yeah.
Okay. I was like, cool, you need me here 365 days a year, I'll be yeah. here 365 days a year. Certainly, you know, I have been there every day since we opened. You know, sometimes it's like, okay, I've spent the night and I'll leave at 9 o'clock in the morning because I've been there since 3 o'clock the next... the afternoon before. I've spent a couple of 25 to 28 hour days there just because, like, you just get into it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, cool, I just got to keep doing this stuff. And then it's like, what? It's fun. You know, then the prep crew comes in from the night before and they're like, You're in the same clothes. I know you didn't get lucky. You've been here all night. So it's just
I'm
been
sorry.
No, it's not half as sorry as I am. but you know, this essentially is my
That's
girlfriend.
That's phase two of bar ownership.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't have
Audrey.
Time
Audrey was like,
right
she's
now.
Like, Brian, you're not going to date anybody for a year.
Yeah,
she's
totally.
Like, just
at
mail
least.
It away.
At
I,
least.
I was like, all right. I was like. Can I be the guy that has both? It'd be kind of nice. You know, and Emily was like, Brian, it's
Not
lonely
yet.
At the top.
I'm standing in your lane. I do hope you have the time. I do pick up number two. I do keep on dating with you. Take it. Me, I try, but I can't see you every night.
we got to roll back to when you were talking about, okay, if I'm going to be doing this, then I need to have control of this, 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 this. And because this is music and booze, we got to talk about the music side, because you demanded control of the music stuff. Now, what was your experience when you were doing your Tiki Mondays? What were you doing?
I just wanted, like, I'm a white guy from the suburbs. Like, I don't have a real crazy, esoteric, cool collection of music. I'm just a guy who likes things you can snap your fingers to and, like, that people recognize. Like, I've listened to your other podcasts, and I was like, I recognize maybe 30 to 40% of the people that everyone's talking about.
Well, I learn something every time, if that makes you feel better. And I'm like an extreme music nerd and worked in the business forever. So every time I do one of these, I always learn something or have fun with it, but it's every time. So don't worry about that.
I mean, I grew up with, like, shit. Like, do you remember those commercials that were like,
Seattle?
Yeah, it was, yeah. Seattle was, yeah, from sixth grade on through college. Mm-hmm. You know, I was in Seattle, so it was, but
and that's,
you know,
a music town.
Yeah, but it was funny when Nirvana and Pearl Jam were like blowing up. I was on the complete opposite side of the state.
Yeah.
So when I'd go home to Seattle, like during Christmas breaks, they'd be like, "Oh, you're just one of those alternative freaks in flannel." I was like, "No, man, I wear it because I'm fucking cold. Like, I don't wear it as a fashion statement. I wear it for my health. You know, it could be 30 below in Pullman, Washington. Yeah, the winters that I spent there were some of the coldest I've ever been around. But it was, you know, yeah, I got into, you know, obviously, I was listening to Nirvana on the way to meet you for brunch today. It was just like, you know, that's like home to me. I grew up with, my brothers tried to like teach me about music from like a very young age.
I was
like,
going to say, you were the baby, so I would think that your brothers were the ones, because that's what I did for my little siblings. You know, I was shoving music down their throat.
My first album was Get Your Ya-Ya's Out by the Rolling Stones. And I was a fucking kid. I didn't know anything except like, hey, there's a guy who's like jumping up and down in a cool little hat on the front. I was like, that's cool. I think I was listening to Sesame Street Fever at the time. Might have been my favorite.
Yeah, I had that record.
It might have been my favorite album. I used to come home as a teenager and watch my mom, catch my mom dancing and vacuuming to that.
To the Sesame Street Fever
soundtrack. To the Sesame Street Fever soundtrack. She's adorable. And then, like, the first 45 I had was Cat Scratch Fever. With the B-side was Wang Dang Sweet Poon Tang.
Oh, my God.
So it's like most of my music is like, it's all classic stuff that, like,
that's
people
awesome.
Have heard before. You know, it's like, I just want, you know, and I like new stuff. Well, I don't know anything about current music today, to be honest. But, like, when I first moved here, it was like there were... My brother was really is really big into music, and, like, he used to make me mixtapes and stuff like that when I was in college, you know, and we had... When he had his photography studio, we had, like, a giant cabinet full of music. And so there was always music going on from his partner, Gary, when he would be developing film. He was playing music. There was always music going on. And I remember... I mean, Neil Young was big. That's when I got into Neil Young when I first moved here. And it was, at that time, it was Harvest Moon was the album.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then I got into other things. Like, everyone knows This Is Nowhere. Danny, like, introduced me to a friend of his, David Petillo. At the time, he had this band called Myrrh. My brother did the album, designed the album cover for him. Now David is, like, he's off. He's known as Strange Magic, and he does... David is the only friend I've ever had where I was like, I actually like your music. Like, I'm not just telling you I like your music.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah,
when
I'm
you
an
can
asshole.
Do that?
Like,
No. Please, I've worked in music for so long, and it's always so great when you can actually like your friend's band.
Oh, my God.
I
have been a huge fan of David's music ever since I met him. He's also just he's like a family friend now. Like,
yeah.
He hasn't been to the bar yet, but I know he wants to come, and I can't wait for him to get there. I tried playing some of his music at Tiki Mondays, but it was a little too loud and not... but, you know, Danny and I would go see shows of his in the Lower East Side, and we'd scream old songs. Like, he had this one song called Power Monger that we fucking loved. It was just like a powerhouse song. And we'd just be like, Power Monger, play Power Monger! He's like, I just love his music, and I got into him, and then Soul Coughing and G Love and Special Sauce. Like, they, I saw Soul Coughing at Irving Plaza. I saw G Love was like playing at the Summer Stage. Mm-hmm. So those are like bands that I got into when I first moved here. Like, I was, my brother gave me advice when I was in college. He gave me a journal, and he goes, fill this up with all these crazy nights you're ever gonna have. And he's like, all those nights of beer soak induced wisdom. He's
did
like,
did you do it?
Oh yeah. Because
you and I have both talked about how we both have a writer's
I had a journal from freshman year in college till I moved to New York, you know.
I got my first journal when I was 8 years old, and I continued to write in them until I was with someone that we were living together. I thought we were getting married, and then we split up, and then I had what I called my journal of pain.
Yeah.
And I basically wrote a whole journal that was just for a year, how my life was horrible and how I just wanted it back and all these terrible things that happened, blah, blah. And he might be listening to this podcast because we're still friends today.
That's good.
Yeah, it worked out in that way. He's married. He's got two kids. They're great. We do work together. It's wonderful. But that was the last journal. So that was, I was maybe 27 or something. So I had a good 20-year run of keeping
that's
journals.
A lot. I got mine, I guess now that I remember it, I got it in senior, like when I was graduating high school. And I still have it. I still have the journal in front of me. I tried like keeping a journal on a computer, but it was just easier. Like, I just enjoyed it more, like writing on a piece of
paper.
Yeah,
I like writing on paper too.
And I'm so painfully shy in person and on paper, and so like I could never show my writing to anybody. My friend Tiff once like read my journal because I left it sitting on the table
in
the apartment. I was fucking livid, and he was like, you're good. I was like, well, hopefully you didn't read anything about it. But I remember I had
about her.
Tiff is he's another old family friend. Like, my growing up period in New York, like, I came here when I was 22, mm-hmm. 22, 23, just after college. And
so it was this real formative 20s.
There are a lot of friends now that were my brother's friends that were essentially like big brothers and father figures to me. You know, Gary Breckheimer he's my brother's best friend. You know, Gary has always looked out for me. Tiff Pemberton, David Patillo, Paul Chan, Alex Delight, like, these were all guys that were like big brother, father figure, like, took care of me. And, you know, now they're older and some of them have kids and families and stuff like that. And they're like, you're like an adult now. Like, you own a bar. And, like, you know, I'm no longer Baby Brian or Danny's little brother. But I mean, I love all of it. Like, I wouldn't trade my first years in New York here for anything. Like, I had the best experience. I met my best friend Garth during that period. You know, we grew up together, you know, not getting dates and working really hard. Like, it was just, you know, we bonded.
Now you can blame the bar.
Yeah.
Although, I don't know, you're probably going to meet a lot of people during the course of that bar. You'll just be too busy to follow up.
Yeah, everybody thinks I'm too busy to have a personal life. I would love to prove them wrong, but no one has taken me up on that challenge yet. But I digress. Literally.
So I wanted to ask you about the music in the bar.
I am the first person to take control of the music away from Mario Carbone, which I was fucking shocked. Mario loves music, and he has curated it for every major food group location.
Okay.
This was the first time that they were like,
no.
You have it, Brian. They're like, you know.
Well, you're creating a very singular experience.
But I've never had a music conversation with Mario, but I think he is just as, if not more, passionate about music in a workspace as I am. Mm-hmm. Like, I love Etta James and Miles Davis and jazz and stuff like that is great. when I'm wearing my ass as a hat in service, like, I need something to kind of pick me up a little bit and keep me going. And so it's like, I like to have a wide variety of music that, based on time and mood of the bar, you know, but things that people like recognize and can tap their toes to. And, you know, every once in a while, it's like I have Morphine on, and like every once in a while, somebody be like, is that fucking Morphine? Like, I haven't heard Morphine in a bar in like ever. And I was like, yeah, I was like, that was another band that I grew up with. Like, G-Love, Soul Coughing, Morphine. Those were bands that I grew up with, you know, my early years here. I remember one time when I was doing prep for Tiki Mondays, and I went into Pouring Ribbons on a Sunday night. It was very early. It was very slow. And they had Nebraska on.
Nebraska?
Springsteen's Nebraska.
Oh, God.
And I was like, and my friend,
and that was just during prep, so nobody was
no,
in the space.
This was actually during
the bar was
service.
Open.
Yeah,
oh, wow.
There wasn't that many people in there. And my friend Chelsea, who works for me now, Chelsea Kaiser, she's a big Springsteen fan, and she's like me, and she loved, she's like, I was like, really? I was like, I fucking love this album. Not sure it's bar appropriate.
Yeah.
And she's like, I know, Brian, it's slow, but I just love it. And I was like, you know what? I was like, you're fucking hired. Like, I love the way she thinks. We're also Star Wars, Marvel Universe nerds
well. But, oh, yeah, we were having that conversation. And by the way, we were talking, so we didn't throw it out. You did see the little girl who went by with her R2-D2 helmet here in the park. Did you not see that? There was a girl who bit
totally
it earlier.
Self-absorbed.
So we're sitting here.
Totally
we're sitting
that.
Here in a park. In New York, and there are kids everywhere they were playing, and a little girl went by on a little scooter. I think she's gone. She was all in pink, and she bit it over here for a second, and I heard her go
that,
down.
I say, oh, yeah, I saw her go down.
Because I was worried she was going to start crying and all this stuff, but she's trained. She knows, oh, I bit
that
it.
That was a girl? I thought that was a cat. Kid with the glasses?
I thought it was a little girl. Well, you know what? I'm thrown off by the pink. I'm falling into the stereotypes. I don't know. But what I did notice was that child was wearing an R2-D2 helmet. So parents are starting them off right.
Oh, yeah.
So what's your favorite thing to hear when you're in the bar then? Since you've got the Polynesian going, and it's, I would think there's so much, because I know when I saw you there the other night, we got to stay for a long time, so we got to spend time with you.
Yeah.
And I think even when we left, you were like, wasn't this, the kitchen was flooding or something?
Yeah, there was a...
Something was happening. Something was leaking. So, you know,
yeah,
there's always something.
Behind the fire.
There's always something.
Fire.
And I think it's just sort of... That's just nature of the beast. It's, you're kind of like, hey, I'm sitting here talking to you guys for 5 minutes, and guess what? I still have a place to run, so let me go put out whatever kind of fire I need to put out right now. Take care of something.
Yeah.
So when you're in the midst of all that organized chaos, does anything pop on that makes you... You notice it, you perk up a little bit, and it brightens your moment?
Well,
I mean,
it's your playlist. We've been, like, a music that comes on?
Yeah, music,
it's on the playlist, like, it's this weird thing, we're using this thing, Gravy, and, you know, I don't know, it's not shuffling my list as much as I would like, you know, because it's like, everyone's like, Brian, you got to make these playlists bigger. I'm like, they're like 8 hours long. I was like, and there's four of them or five of them. I was like, this thing needs to shuffle. Like, I just want to unplug Gravy and, you know,
and
but we've
got to
do it for law or whatever.
Yeah,
for services. I miss, because it was the song that everybody just perked up to at Tiki Mondays. I miss Jump in the Line by Harry Belafonte. I actually have not heard that. It may have played, but I have not heard it at my own bar.
I heard it at Holiday Cocktail Lounge last night.
I've heard it at Carbone. You know?
Like, but you're like, one day when you hear that song
it
in
was
your
like,
bar.
Every time that played at Tiki Monday, like, Ryan started jumping up and everybody started dancing. It was just like, it's the song that lit the bar on fire no matter what time.
It always does.
And, you know, now it's like, I have favorite songs. There is, on the Medium soundtrack that gets towards the middle of...
Kind of like a midday.
Yeah, it's
kind
like
of
a
soundtrack.
Bridge from like the early Exotica reggae music to my Tiki Monday soundtrack. Mm-hmm. I have two Ethel Merman songs on a mix that I'm just like, I totally dig Ethel Merman. I don't know where this comes from, but it's anything you can do, I can do better. Like, her version of that is awesome. And There's I Got Sunshine. Oh shit, what is it? It's like I Got Sunshine in a Bottle or something like that. It's crazy. I remember the Sunshine one is from Cheers. There was an episode of Cheers where Carla opens, she comes into the bar, she's setting up the bar, she's by herself. She goes over to the jukebox and she kicks it and this Ethel Merman song comes on and she's dancing and pirouetting, putting, you know, setting glasses, you know, bowls of chips and stuff like that, setting up. She's having the time of her life. Then the door opens up and Norm Peterson comes in and she's like, the music goes off. She goes back to Carla Tortelli. She's like, how's it going, Carla? He's like, what the hell is that supposed to mean? You know, and it's just like, it's the perfect epitome of like what it's like. Like setting up a bar is sometimes the funnest part of your night because it's like you're getting in, you're telling stories to each other and you're like, what happened to you last night? Blah, blah, blah. You're having a great time. And then service comes in. You don't necessarily turn into a bitter woman, but yeah. Like, you know, then you go into a much more professional, you go into your professional state, professional, you know, persona. And sometimes, you know, that stuff carries over and you have a good time. And, yeah. And but it's like, I don't know, Ethel Merman, just, I think she's got a great and funny voice and it just makes me laugh and smile.
It makes you happy. Yeah.
Yes.
I love bar, this. Yeah, I love that I've learned this about you today.
I don't have Martin Denny on my soundtrack, but I got Ethel Merman, you know.
Well, maybe that's the note to go out on, because I kind of love that. That puts a smile on my face doing that. I mean, I was brought up with a lot of Broadway music in my world. Not that she was necessarily Broadway, but she's definitely of that vaudevillian kind of vibe and everything in a way.
It's
definitely camp.
There's
it's
theatrics,
fun.
You know?
Definitely theatrics.
And that's what tiki is.
I was going to say, tiki's pretty theatrical in a way.
Just so. Look at the people who drink the tiki drinks, let alone like how the drinks come out, you know?
I don't even know how many flowers I have at home that I wear in my hair. Today I'm wearing none, but I have...
You got flowers on your ears.
I got flowers on my ears. All right, we're there. Well, thank you so much, Brian. I really appreciate you sitting and doing this with me.
It's been a pleasure.
Awesome. Yeah. We have a lovely New York afternoon.
In a park.
It's perfect.
Taking stock of what I have and what I haven't. What do I find? The things I got will keep me satisfied. Check it up on what I have and what I haven't. What do I find? A healthy balance on the credit side. Got no diamond, got no pearl. Still I think I'm a lucky girl. I got the sun in the morning and the moon at night.
I got the sun in the morning and the moon at night.
Got no mansion, got no yacht. Still I'm happy with what I got. I got the sun in the morning and the moon at night.
I got the sun in the morning and the moon at night.
If you want more Brian Miller, you're just going to have to go to the Polynesian in New York City to get it. You can also follow the Polynesian on Instagram. It's at the Polynesian Tiki Bar, and they do have a website you can check out as well with all kinds of glorious photographs of their drinks and the space itself. It's got a lovely rooftop bar as well. So get there before it gets too cold and check that all out. And that's all I got for you. It was a lovely time. We might have to do a part two. He has so many great stories that we spoke of earlier in the day that didn't get recorded. Maybe I can get those the next time I'm out in New York. Thanks for tuning in. We will have a Brian Miller Spotify playlist. And you can get that information if you go to my Facebook page. Super, super special thanks to Brian for sitting down with me. It's kind of tough to nail down a pirate and get him to sit and chat with you for a while. So I'm glad that the captain was willing to take a break and sit with us on a lovely Sunday afternoon. Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you by the podcast Inside the Desert Oasis Room, which brings you casual and entertaining conversation with artists, mixologists, collectors, and enthusiasts of the tiki world, all while enjoying a tropical cocktail or three. Check it out at desertoasisroom.com. Thanks for tuning in to our barroom chats on Music and Booze with Mo. For more info about today's guests and our Spotify playlist, check out my Facebook page, Mo Herms. Please subscribe to the podcast and feel free to tell all your friends about it. Lower your expectations and join us at the bar. Till next time, cheers.